Welcome. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another exciting episode of the Vinnie Eastwood Show. And coming at us live from what appears to be a Japanese changing room is Mel and Thomas Benedict from mel-thomas.com. He's a dude who knows a hell of a lot about near-death experiences. Mel, welcome to the program.
Hi, Vinnie. Good to be back on the air with you.
Yeah, I think... I vaguely recall last time we had an hour with you, and then we decided that 2 hours would be probably a bit more appropriate.
Sure.
I could be misremembering. Speaking of misremembering, I was just wondering about this as well. Is a near-death experience, how often do people really have these? I mean, what's the likelihood that you will die and then come back to life in terms of how many people actually die?
Well, you know, the odds of that have increased dramatically with modern medical technology. People have been having and reporting very similar experiences all the way back in time, as far as we can remember. But in those days, you died, you know, mostly. Nowadays, they're pulling so many people back from death that we really have to, the doctors are redefining what the actual state of death is now, and when does that actually occur?
So many
tens of thousands a year now.
It seems to be going the other way. They're also starting to define what is life. How long has the fetus gestated before it's a living being? And there was a case in New Zealand, and you might appreciate this, where a father and his pregnant wife were driving along, and they got into a car accident, and it was the father's fault. And then they charged him with murder because the baby died, right? Well, they were thinking of charging him for murder. So it's like, mate, how callous can you really be? It's like somebody just lost a child, and then you're going to charge him for the murder in an accident.
Mm-hmm.
It was really, really kind of harsh to me.
And that's a tough one because you know, if you shot a pregnant woman and killed her baby, you would be charged for double murder. And this is just an odd one of those cases that happens that's going to redefine the law at some point. So what do you do?
Yeah, well, so you're an expert in near death experiences, but what we're talking about is nearly alive experiences.
Well, you know, there's a new genre happening. It's called near life experiences.
I think that should actually be starting to happen a lot more now, because I don't know if you've noticed, but so many people out there, they barely seem like they're alive at all.
Mm-hmm.
Just zombified.
I call them the Walking Dead, and a lot of reasons for that. You see the Walking Dead around us. Cultures, family life, this world kind of beats you down before you get started in many ways.
Yeah, it really does. And it's, what was I doing? I was having a conversation with Anthony Ravlich yesterday, talking about human rights and the United Nations and the education system and how people should be able to have the ability to, you know, fulfill their lives and their life dreams and what have you. But they're not able to in so many cases. It's my conclusion that if you want to accomplish anything decent in life, you have to be capable of overcoming and ignoring and shutting out a huge quantity of the world that tells you you're useless, you're pathetic, you must go get this slave job, you must pay this mortgage, and so on and so forth. It's basically you have to fight against the entire current of this cultural river that is washing you downstream towards a life of insignificant days counting by.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, the whole modern economic system is dragging all of us middle class into being servants and serfs. And you're born into it. It's evolved this way. I would say, especially since World War II and Bill Clinton really got it rolling, the end of the road for the middle class. So we're all being dragged into this culture where you're going to have to be part of the stock market to even get by. You can never earn enough money again to get by. So this is going to change, though, because the middle class is really feeling it, and the middle class is really the ocean of all of these stock market and everything else are the fish in the sea. And so we need to become self-initiated and realize that as a middle class and as a world culture of species, we have accomplished so much in what I call collective intelligence. We've accomplished so much till now. Why let the kings, priests, and thieves take it from us? You know, this has happened in every peak, in every culture. When there's been a zenith, the priests, kings, and thieves come in to kind of ruin it for everybody. This is a historical pattern, and we're letting it happen again.
I had this theory that maybe with the internet and with the sharing of information for the first time in history, we could prevent that cycle from recurring.
I think we have a better chance than ever if you use the technology, if you do something with your life about this. You can't just sit around and hope it's going to get better, because the thieves are stealing everything now.
Yeah.
By that, I mean the economic system and the stock market, those kind of things.
Mm. Well, see, those are real physical things that they're stealing. I think they're also stealing what's human potential, because you have a look at, say, the education system, and it doesn't train people how to start a business or create a product or to market said product or to.
Well, we're still stuck on the original idea of why public education took place in the first place, which started in England at the beginning of the Industrial Revolution to bring ignorant people off the farms out of the country, teach them to read and write and operate machines. And then our entire education system from then on till right now is really set up to make you a consumer and a producer. And that's pretty much all the system seems to be interested in. You know, they're cutting all the arts programs. You know, America's 43rd in the world in education now. It's astounding.
Yeah, I was watching a clip of a TV show the other day. It says America is number one in only three things: military spending, incarcerating its own citizens, and forget what the third one was. It might have been most debt per household or something like that. Does that sound like the greatest country in the world to you?
Well, I tell you, I live here, and it's getting crazier all the time, because there's an oligarchy that's formed, and that's the super rich are getting richer all the time, and they really suck the lifeblood out of the middle class, and they've set up a system where it's very difficult to not play their program. And of course, their program isn't going to win for you, the small guy, anyway, which is the sad thing about the whole thing. You know, in my study of longevity, and that's my main study in my life, is longevity, quality of life. One of the things about that ties into this metaphorically is that, you know, cancer cells would probably live forever if they didn't kill their host. Cancer cells don't shorten their telomeres when they divide, so they don't age. So a cancer would literally live forever until it kills its host. I think that's what the economic system's doing. They don't realize it. They become a cancer on the rest of us. Literally, I believe that.
Yeah, like a plague of economic boils and sores kind of thing.
And is it smart to kill the host? A symbiotic relationship where everybody's healthy, everybody's doing well, like your own body, like your own immune system should be acting. We have a lot of parasites in our system now. The sad thing is that there are more millionaires and billionaires now than ever before, but I know some of these people. I've watched people become millionaires. And I tell you, something happens to people once they become insulated, don't have to worry about bills or the rent anymore. They forget about the rest of us. They really do.
Yeah. There was a movie called Unfaithful with Cher in it. And this whole premise of this hitman who's hired by her husband to come and kill her. And he's really opinionated hitman, and he has to sit there and kind of keep her in the house for a while until he gets this phone call for the order to kill her. And they have these conversations about all sorts of stuff. It's a great film. And one of the statements that he made was really interesting to me. It says, "You rich people, you don't have to worry about your rent or your car being fixed or anything like that. And then you start getting all depressed because you don't have any distractions, and now you have time to contemplate how fracked up you are."
You know, in a way, I've watched money make people's fantasies possible, but their fantasies haven't been good for them. You know, it's interesting. When you can afford all your fantasies, that I haven't seen that turn out too good all the time.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I see it's like the Forrest Gump parable. My mom always said there's only so much money a man really needs, and the rest is just for show.
It's true.
Yeah, we're going to focus on living kind of humble. Like, I'm not 100% sure what I plan to do with my life, because my father was a very wealthy man, and he had terrible relationships with everybody because he just didn't care about anybody. He only really cared about his money. And it was very interesting. He didn't even care about me. Yeah, I didn't see him for like 17 years and then he died. You know, that's not just a money thing, though. You know, that's a, I'm not 100% sure what that is.
For me, what I've seen, money is very interesting. I like the whole idea because, to me, in my life experience, money makes people more real than anything else, religion or anything else, because, you know, you put an issue of a lot of money in front of someone or the lack of a lot of money when they need it. Money is like this drug, you know, like some drugs bring out the worst in people and the same drugs will bring out the best in people. Money is a powerful, powerful drug. It's it can make you delusional. It's amazing. But I have nothing against it. I believe you can do great things with money. You know, I believe people like Bill Gates and other, there are some great philanthropists in this world that are turning their fortunes around. And
I'd have to argue with you over the Bill Gates one. I mean, what's he doing? Well, he's purchasing Monsanto, who purchased Blackwater. He's financing massive vaccine programs that infect people with really horrible viruses in Africa, you know, this kind of thing. Well, his daddy was on the board of, what was it, Planned Parenthood, which used to be called the American Eugenics Society, and he donates heaps to that, and they've aborted so much as 80 million black fetuses since it started and that kind of thing. One of the biggest covert genocides of all time. Yeah.
I agree that there's been a big eugenics program going on ever since the book The Population Bomb by Paul Ehrlich, and that has had a decimating effect on our demographics in the whole world because it changed the whole world. The amazing thing is that Ehrlich was everything he predicted in that book never came true. He believed we'd be all savages and cannibals eating each other by the 1980s. Everything in his book never came true, including the population bomb. There's no population bomb. We're hitting zero population growth in more and more countries every day. You know, yeah, I was saying right after my near-death experience in 82, I was telling people that the light told me that humans could never overpopulate the Earth and that would never happen, and I'm right. Look at all the facts today.
Yeah. It was really funny. I was watching this video here. What was it? It was a real paranoid video about Muslims invading Europe and America and how they have more children and eventually the Muslim population growth would overgrow and then all of a sudden all the Western nations would be living under Sharia law. And I was just looking at the statistics on this. When you're living in an underdeveloped country, birth rate's really, really, really high. Reason for this being is because if you ain't got no money or nothing like that, you don't really have any other way to grow your wealth apart from to have children, you know. There was a farmer that was once asked by a wealthier farmer next to him, "Why do you have so many children?" And he pointed to the man's tractor and he says, "That there that you've got, which I don't have, I have to have many children in order to get more work done on my farm. You don't have to." And what I found very interesting is the birth rates in Western populations, as soon as you've got money, as soon as you've got education, as soon as you've got all these things, the amount of children that you have declines very, very rapidly indeed, to the point in which what people are talking about is overpopulation or whatever. We're actually in more of an extinction scenario than an overpopulation scenario, if anything. Like you need 2.6 birth rate in order to maintain a society just to be able to keep it above board and survive with enough new generations coming up to keep working and supporting those on welfare and what have you. And we're currently sitting around between 1 and 1.6 in most Western countries. We're going freaking extinct. And people are talking about a population bomb? You've got to be freaking kidding me.
Well, there's demographics is something that the light in my near-death experience told me to study and really pay attention to, because it's more real than almost anything else you can imagine in determining our fate. And your stats are right, except the interpretation is this, at least from what I've learned, and that is that starting about 2020, the population's really going to start dipping very, very quickly, because the peak population now is 55 and over. And by 2100, there'll probably be close to half the population that we have now on planet Earth. Now, what that means is that there are a number of things that means on a couple of levels. One thing, it means less impact on the Earth by human beings. We've accomplished this at a time after 1975, because since 1975, we have enough technology, we have enough science, we can clothe, feed, comfort, educate every human on Earth without destroying it. But also, this, because of shrinking population, the demographics are showing people are moving to cities more, population centers.
Okay. Mellon Thomas Benedict from mellon-thomas.com is my guest. We'll be right back, ladies and gentlemen, after the break.
But I've never been edible. I'm a cracker, not a vegetable, fed to an extraterrestrial. The beat is so electrical, it'll pump your heart ventricles, but I bet you will eject it if I start getting intellectual.
Welcome back.
So until I can say I'm credible.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, my very special guest, Mellon Thomas Benedict. He goes well with chicken as well. you talked about demographics, speaking of which.
Yeah, well, demographics is really one of the most important things that we can look at and understand about what's going on. It always has been, it always will be, as far as cultures, economics, and all of that. The really big guys that have the supercomputers that do all the scenarios, the large companies that do this research work have these supercomputers, and they run every scenario from the very best case to the very worst case. And even with that, they're quite often wrong, because they leave out little things like demographics. There was Paul Ehrlich's book, Population Bomb, was so wrong because they didn't have one demographics person help them write that book. They just kind of made it all up from what they perceived the world was doing. And that was my big problem. You know, before I had my near-death experience, I was convinced humanity was a cancer on planet Earth, and that nature had gone wrong, and that humanity would destroy the Earth in one way or another. And I was wrong. And most people believe that the world's about 95% broken, but in my DVD and the seminars I do, I try to point out to people with research that you can check yourself that the world is 95% better now than it's ever been in the history of the world for the general population of the planet, and that it's a 95% chance all this is going to work out very well, really. So I'm very positive about the future.
Yeah. There's an awful lot of fear-mongering out there, and I don't know about you, but very occasionally now I'll tune in and I'll watch the news and hoping to hear something important, something of consequence, something that's real. And instead, a convenience store has been held up by a singular robber. A person has been killed by their family member. A cat has been stuck up a tree and a fireman retrieved it. You know, things that are either really scary, but isolated and insignificant when you look at the whole picture, or things that are just completely insignificant and don't matter at all, and you wonder how the frack they made the news.
It's so true. There's more good news every day going on in the world than ever there is bad news. But the problem is that we're not holding our leaders accountable. You know, in every election in almost every country, they promise you everything and deliver very little of that, if any. We've been doing this for generations, and it's time that we really, really had our media and ourselves hold our leaders accountable. That's you've got to hold people accountable. This is big stakes going on here.
Yeah. And also, I was thinking about, December 21st, 2012, some people said there was going to be a massive consciousness shift in humanity and everybody was going to suddenly see auras and what have you. Didn't happen. Some people said that it was going to be massive tsunamis and earthquakes and things of that nature, and the whole world's going to be wiped out. Didn't happen. Some people said that it was Return of the Destroyer and a massive planetoid called Planet Nibiru would slam into us and destroy all life on Earth. Didn't happen. Back in the day, when people made predictions that didn't pan out, they got stoned to death. And nowadays, if your predictions don't pan out, you simply move the goalpost back. Oh, no, it's actually going to happen in July of 2013.
Mm-hmm. Happens all the time. They just write another book. That's you know, that's how gullible I think the higher conscious movement has become. It's become very gullible and not that intelligent. That's what surprised me. I've been in the higher consciousness field now 30-some years, and I don't see it adding up to much more than a blip on the screen the way I see it developing. The thing is that true spirituality, true consciousness, is not based on all this New Age stuff. It's based on much more practical things, you know? And I call it, and I'm writing a little book called Practical Enlightenment. Well, what is enlightenment, really?
You know, it's so funny you should mention this, because that's exactly what I was thinking about today before coming on the show, is that the reason why people in the quote-unquote New Age movement, or people who talk about the soul enlightenment or spirituality, I was just thinking, these people have just simply lost touch with reality. To a large degree, they think that these realms of higher consciousness are in fact more important to what they're physically doing in their own very lives, to what is really happening that they can actually evidence, you know. I am not saying that spirituality and pursuing enlightenment and talking about eternal joy is a bad thing. What I'm saying is it doesn't trump reality, okay? It's very important to understand that we live in a dualistic existence, that both really do matter, and one is not more important than the other. Just if you decide one's important and the other one doesn't matter, that's when you get into a bit of trouble.
I think what a lot of spiritual people have forgotten in all their disciplines is that the greatest spirit on earth is the spirit of life. It's something you can actually touch, interface with, become a part of. It's amazing. I get tingles every time I think about my new attitude since my near-death experience about the spirit of life is the greatest spirit on earth.
Could you explain what the spirit of life actually is, in your opinion?
Well, the spirit of life it was not created by a white man in heaven sitting on a throne. It wasn't created by a crow landing to earth and making babies. The spirit of life, we will probably never know where this all began. I've asked the light many times, and I keep being told what the masters have been told, and that is there was no beginning and there is no end to this. So, but what we do have is what we know about our life on planet Earth. That's where I kind of focus. You know, I'm a native Earthling. I'm not from some other planet, as a lot of people claim to be. I'm a native Earthling, and the study of life and biology is a sacred thing to me on this planet. I've coined a phrase in a ULL called sacred biology, which I'll be putting up very soon. This evolution that we've been on is an astounding journey, and people want hocus pocus and they want magic, but this is bigger than that. Imagine this. If you're in a human body right now, you have taken the whole walk through all of evolution from the beginning of life on this planet to this moment. And all of that life is within you. It shows in your DNA. It shows in all the stages of a mother's pregnancy. If you look at the fetus goes through every stage of evolution that the Earth has been through. I mean, we go through fish stage, a dinosaur stage. We go through tails and all that while we're in our mother's belly. So human beings... if you're a human being, you have taken the whole trip. You personally have made this 4 billion year journey to be here now. And what we've accomplished in this journey through biological consciousness, through cellular consciousness, and through intellectual consciousness is something we shouldn't lose. It's worth cherishing and it's precious to us. So it doesn't matter if you're dumb or smart. It doesn't matter if you're rich or poor. If you're in a human body right now, you personally have made this journey, 4 billion year walkabout, to be here now. That's what sacred biology is to me.
Sacred biology. Now that it all also erupts a whole bunch of conflicting thoughts within me to think that science itself ain't sacred. And I was just wondering, you know, in this day and age where we have people who are talentless getting massive massive contracts in Hollywood and things like that, or people who have never written a song in their life or shown any ability to get off their own ass, win American Idol, and this kind of stuff. What is sacred anymore?
Sacred is something that you choose to make sacred, like love. Love is sacred to some people, very special. Your children, ethics. These are sacred things that we make sacred. They are not sacred innately created sacred. We make these things sacred. And so for me, and what I learned in my near-death experience about biology and about evolution, really gave me a sacred experience about this. It's beyond intelligence. It's beyond magic. It's unbelievable what we're a part of. And we're at the tip of the iceberg. It's unbelievable how far we've come to be where we are.
Yeah, yeah. And I think that is the mentality behind people who've actually accomplished a lot in their lives is that, well, look at it this way. They do so much every single day that only but once in a while can they look back and see what they've accomplished because they're still doing new stuff every day. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Yeah, I just recently, I was on a cruise. I was asked to be a speaker on a cruise before Christmas for the December 21st thing. And so I was on a cruise to the end of the world. And I thought, well, that's perfect. I've never been on a cruise before. If it happens, I'll be at the bar having a martini. And what I learned is something very fascinating about all of this. And that is, you know, I never predicted the world would end. I wanted to be there when other people started realizing it. And oddly enough, for so many people that booked and went down there, the promoters overbooked the whole thing down there. It was a giant disaster. Not only cruise I was on, but everybody's experience was a giant disaster down there. Nobody had permits to go near the pyramids and do ceremonies that they'd planned and promoted. And I was there. I saw it all. You know, it should have been a reality show.
Well, I think that's quite funny, actually. You know, you base your life on something that doesn't exist because you're too stupid to fact check. And surprisingly, when you go and celebrate all this stuff and plan a whole bunch of things, it just doesn't pan out.
I know. I wonder if you can get your money back for all those books you bought about the end of the world before December 21st. You know what I mean?
See, I was looking at a DVD though on my shelf that one of my guests sent me called 2012 and The Shift, where he goes through all these Mayan ceremonies and all of this kind of stuff. And I had to turn the DVD off when I tried to watch it after about 12 minutes or something because it annoyed the hell out of me.
Mm-hmm.
And this was before 2012 happened, you know?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I don't know about you, but have you seen that movie 2012 with the massive tidal waves and disaster movie?
The theater film?
Yeah.
In fact, I tried to watch all of those things, even on History Channel and Discovery Channel, because people always ask me these questions, but not impressed by any of it, frankly.
Yeah, I don't know. I actually was. I thought the movie was really cool.
Oh, the movie? It was a good adventure movie, yeah, great special effects.
You see, but that's about it. And I was just wondering, how many times have you seen the end of the world on a movie?
Well, you know, I do a whole talk called The History of the End of the World, and I trace back all the times the world has been predicted to end, going back to 3000 BC, actually. This is a common thread among people that can't see the future and lose all hope.
Maybe it's because they don't appreciate what they've got, so they start predicting ways for it to differentiate.
You know, it's interesting that people don't get it. There is no death. There is not going to be an end of life as we know it. We will always have to change. Of course, everything keeps changing. Nothing will stay the same. But we've been in the last 10,000 years on planet Earth have been an incredible blessing geologically, planet-wise. As far as collective intelligence, the collective intelligence has hit a peak that's absolutely amazing in the last 10,000 years. And it's just a phenomenal what we have been able to accomplish in just a short period of time. Before this, there were great ice ages and all of that, which made life incredibly difficult. And I have a good friend of mine that's a UFO expert, and he was telling me how smart the ancients were. I've studied the ancients. I don't see any evidence that they were smarter than us at all. In fact, I believe that the wisest people that have ever lived are living now. And in every level, I mean, some people say we can't build another pyramid, and I know companies that can cut stones like that. But you read the books, there's nobody who can cut a stone like that. But I tell people that who needs to build another one? Who needs another one of those big giant stone pyramids? The pyramids that we're building today, and I show it in my DVD, are nano pyramids. I don't know if you've seen them. These are pyramids at the nano level grown on silica that are perfect pyramids to study 3D human cells under a microscope. Imagine that. The Egyptians could have never imagined building these kind of pyramids. So from going from gigantic down to, nano pyramids is quite a leap. And the Egyptians could never have imagined anything like this.
That's true. We've got a lot of advanced technology today. Jonathan Gray is a New Zealand archaeologist. He wrote a book called Dead Man's Secrets, where he's found, discovered, and documented, I think, about 20 different technologies that the ancients possessed, which are more advanced than we've got today. But you have a look at what we've got today, and we've got 20 million different pieces of technology that were more advanced than what the ancients had.
I tend to agree with you, because if you're a super intelligent civilization that can transcend time and space to get here, you can't get here at the speed of light. It'll take forever. You have to transcend time and space to get here. That means your culture is very, very advanced. And you probably don't even need money anymore. You don't need any of that. I expect more of my aliens than most people seem to expect. I expect more of the aliens. I'll give you an example. If I were an alien culture that wanted something to be discovered when people were intelligent enough to discover it, I would have built a pyramid out of this super material that's incorruptible, unbreakable, an atom bomb couldn't even destroy it. And once a culture figured that out, that would be impressive. But stone and that kind of thing, it's impressive technical capabilities. The Egyptians and the Stone Age people knew more about stones than we do, because that's all they had to work with. But, there was a wood age before the Stone Age. Incredible structures made of wood that we don't even know. We only have shadows of now.
Yeah, it's true. People do expect a lot of their aliens. I only expect my aliens to burst through my chest in a horrible fashion. We'll be right back after the break at the PhinneyEastwoodShow.com.
I got some so-called friends. I'll smile right to my face.
Oh, well, my back is turned. They lie about eugenics all over the place. All right, welcome back. Welcome back, everybody, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. Mel and Thomas Benedict is my guest. You're talking about the wood age before, and look, I've got this conclusion that technology is essentially one of the things that accelerates evolution. Biological evolution is slow. Technological evolution is rapid as heck. You just can't keep up with it, biologically speaking. And in a way, I think that because we're developing all these technologies, we're changing with them. So in essence, it's actually sped up biological evolution. The real fear here, though, is the transhumanist agenda, where they want to merge man with machine. I think kind of it's a bit scary, really, the concept of, in a part, giving up your humanity, because I think it's really the most important thing ever, more important than an iPhone, at least.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, sure, but it's inevitable. There are so many different. It's already begun, because there's so many different body parts that we can replace now with artificial equipment. That's a boon to mankind. And certainly we're now looking at cognitive enhancers, better vision, better hearing, all of that. And it's part and parcel of what's coming. Human beings, as I tried to point out in my DVD and my seminars, so human beings are the masters of metamorphosis. We have been everything on this planet. We have it within our DNA to grow gills again if we need to. We are the masters of metamorphosis, and we are all machines are mind machines. All machines, your car, your watch, your computer, they're all mind machines. They came from the mind. And so there'll be a day in which in the distant future where we don't need machines anymore. Right now we need our machines. We believe we need them, and they are beneficial in many ways. But this is incorporate. We're almost like the Borg in some way. We incorporate everything that we come in contact with. That's why I've always said that I really don't buy all the theories against and for the UFOs. I don't buy them because they're too simplistic or they're too perfect. I can tell you that, you know, there's a lot of sayings that people saying that, well, they don't want to show themselves because they'll change everything on Earth. Well, you can't scare humans with that. I believe if aliens landed tomorrow and made themselves known, within 2 weeks we'd have them in a Pepsi Cola commercial. You know, so I don't buy that. I have some friends that are very big in the UFO movement and lecture on that subject. And we sit around and chat sometimes. And one of them recently was going over this thing with me again, that there's all these great markers on planet Earth, like the pyramids and the snake mounds in Ohio and all these markers to guide the UFOs. And I looked at him and I said, you mean they can transcend time and space and they don't have GPS? And he was stunned. He never thought of that. He never considered that thought in his mind. I would expect a lot more when it comes to these sort of things, you know? So we are going to enhance ourselves. The enhancements, I think, in the future are going to be primarily for the handicapped and be boon to the handicapped. We'll have the handicapped walking again, hearing again, seeing again. I think these are the major advancements. Although I do, when they have them available, want a port put in my head, so I can put one of those gold chips in, you know, one of those fast processors. But who knows if they'll ever get to that. You know, the human mind was not meant to be an industrial model. It's only a blip on the screen in human evolution. The human mind, they say we only use about 5% of our brain. The latest studies show 3%. That's for what's coming. Once we transcend survival, once we've solved the survival problem on planet Earth for everyone, and once we move into new economies that are not based on you having to sell your life to someone else to earn living for food and pay other people to raise your children, then we move into where this brain can really be used. This brain is for the future, and it's going to take us to the future.
Yeah, I always found it interesting that the idea of feminism is to free women, and instead now all the women have to work because they don't have a choice, and now they're not allowed to raise children.
it's an incredible economic situation we've gotten into. I remember, I don't mind showing my age, I remember, and I'm a lot older than you, I remember, and some people my age remember, when for $100 a week, you could have a life, a car, and a house. I remember those days. Can you believe it? What happened? The economics were changed by the experts. And this has not been an accident, what has happened in economics. It's been how much can we get out of every single soul on Earth, which is a predatory parasite system. You know, I remember when gas was 28 cents a gallon. You know, I swore when it hit 50 cents, I'd never drive again. But why? You know, why does this have to change the way it is? So other than that, I think that a new Bill of Rights is coming around. Humans, especially the middle class, has to come up with a new Bill of Rights, a new Magna Carta that doesn't make banks more important than everything else in the world. Be too big to fail? Give me a break. That's a scenario for major disaster in the future. Who's too big to fail? You know, these big bankers that get all these salaries, they were afraid to fire them because, you know, they're so smart. Well, they weren't smart, were they?
I was thinking about this. Too big to fail. Imagine if you had an A student in your class and he was like the best student in the class or whatever, and then one year he goes off the rails and he just starts drinking every day and he doesn't really care about the work or anything and he goes Fs. Would the teacher go, oh my God, he's too big to fail. Let's give him A's or anything like that. Let's send him to higher education and be one of the rulers of society when he clearly hasn't freaking earned it and has totally fallen off the rails and taken an absence of responsibility. That's basically what we're doing here. It's insane. And no wonder the society is ruled by a bunch of ruthless sociopathic criminal scumbags who have no freaking concern for anybody's welfare other than their own, and even then.
Well, thank God there are a lot of people with great wealth that are really do have the right mind. They're against the odds, but the odds are in our favor. There's more philanthropy going on the planet now than ever before in history, and more young people becoming trustees of foundations right now than ever before in history. So, they quite often say the world doesn't change till the old guard dies off. And what we're seeing is the Cold War people, the World War II people, they're passing quickly, and that leaves a new world. You know, you got people like Dick Cheney and others who are that Cold War mentality that just is... It just ruins us. You know, their policies have what's really brought down the world.
Well, here's another problem that I have with that as well, because in terms of the listenership to the show, and you were talking about demographics before, we have a demographics analytics, and it turns out that the age group of between 40 to 65 mm-hmm. are the majority of the listeners to the show. And shows like this, you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So there's a really interesting split here between the elders, as I just like to call them, who remember what things used to be like, that used to be free and easy to live and moral and what have you. And then, of course, there's another split where part of that generation were just basically scum, really bad people who wound up getting into positions of power and whatever, and they wound up setting the policy for all of these good people who don't like it. And those people are still in power today. And then you fast forward to this generation, mate, we're being taught the lessons and curriculums that have been set up by those previous scumbags. Like the UN, for example, massive human rights violators. They've done a whole lot of atrocities and things like that. Well documented, you know. Even in Haiti, I've seen videos of UN tanks rolling through shanty towns, just randomly firing into all these shanties and things like that. Just war crimes, basically. Then there's the Agenda 21 protocol, the desire to get everybody off the land, and the World Health Organization, which is financed by these major pharmaceutical companies, which are total scumbags, and Codex Alimentarius, so to get rid of everybody's natural health and all of that kind of stuff. And in the schools now, like at the elementary, primary level, they're being taught that the UN is the good, loving thing, and they're being taught to be global citizens, right, under this system. And so when the old guard dies, when my elders die, of old age or exterminators or whatever, I am really worried what the next generation is going to wind up doing, because as far as I know, the best way to control a society is to indoctrinate the youth, and indoctrinated they are.
Well, you know, I see a lot of evidence also of the youth becoming more active than I was, and I was a hippie against Vietnam and all of that. I call myself an anti-war veteran, and I'm proud of it. But I see the youth of today, actually, I'm so impressed. The general youth of today that I look at are doing more than I did, certainly more than my parents did for these type of things. And I see the youth of today doing amazing things. And the great stories of how a child can get an idea and change things in their neighborhood or in their state or in their country or in another country. So I tend to look at that kind of good that's going on, too. There's a massive trend for philanthropy and fairness and justice in this world. That's what's if you look at why people are in the streets and why they're doing the things they're doing, it's for fairness, equality, and justice.
Well, see, I've got the opinion that fairness, equality, and justice is an unnatural state of being. Like, I don't see any animal society or any point throughout history where everything's been fair, everything's been equal, and there has been justice for all. It would be very interesting to see what.
Yeah, it's been evolving.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see if we can do it. But the thing is, my mentality is justice is an artificial state that we have to create. Okay, bad guys don't naturally go down. Like they always say, karma. You know, what goes around comes around. In my experience, it's the bad guys who always get rewarded, and the good people who always get punished. Unless somebody decides to change it.
Well, yeah, that's the thing. We have to become self-initiated now. We're more intelligent than ever, and we have more capability than ever. So I just try to get people to believe in what they believe in.
We'll be right back. Mel and Thomas Benedict, ladies and gentlemen.